Welcome to Civil Defense Radio, where we bring you information about many topics related to civil defense. One of the reasons for starting this show is to inform and educate the American people about the many reasons why we should be involved locally and nationally to make our families, neighborhoods, and communities safer and more resilient to emergencies and disasters. There are many threats to our safety and security as a nation that our federal and state governments have failed to properly inform the citizens about. The results of these potential disasters could have catastrophic effects upon the people and our nation if they should occur. This week, we will discuss one of these major life-threatening events that originates from the sun. To help me with this discussion, we have Drew Bumback, who has more knowledge in this subject than I do. Hello, Drew. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio.
Hi, Preston. Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. We spoke a couple weeks ago, and we had a great conversation about this topic, didn't we?
Absolutely. Yes, we did. This and a number of other topics like EMP as well.
Yeah. I like to have full disclosure here. You are part of the Secure the Grid Coalition, as am I. We have a lot of the same interests in seeing that our nation is properly prepared for such threats as what we're going to talk about today.
Absolutely, yes. And I think, honestly, I think Secure the Grid Coalition is an excellent, excellent group. And I'm grateful to you for introducing me to the group.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Can you give us a brief, your bio is pretty extensive here, and I'd rather not read it. I'd rather get you to just give us a brief idea of your background and why you're so passionate about this subject.
Absolutely. So I've got probably a bit more than 20 years of direct public safety experience as a law enforcement officer, a firefighter, paramedic, and working in EMS, fire rescue, and law enforcement, and also in healthcare. And in that role, I've done, you know, thousands of emergency responses locally. I've also responded to multiple emergencies and disasters at the national level through various federal response teams, and also responded to a number of, or not responded, but worked a number of national special security events, like inauguration, State of the Union, 2002 Winter Olympics, things like that. And I guess maybe about 15 years ago now, I moved from doing a combination of public safety and emergency management to what I call pure emergency management. In other words, no longer a public safety first responder who also does EM, but just doing focusing on emergency management. And in the last 15 years, I've worked on a number of fairly high-level projects for local, state, and federal agencies, private sector, and for governments of foreign nations. And I've helped to develop a number of standards that, you know, have helped to mature the practice and profession of emergency management, including the standards for meeting the needs of children in disasters, protecting them from human trafficking and predators during disasters, working on the National Highly Pathogenic Avian Response Plan, a number of different things. One of the reasons that I got really passionate about the grid is I have somehow managed to specialize in catastrophic disaster planning, preparedness, and response. And in doing that, I've worked on a number of catastrophic disaster programs for FEMA, for Department of Homeland Security, and for a number of other entities. And one of the biggest ones was the New Madrid Seismic Zone earthquake. And for those of your listeners who don't know about New Madrid, it's something they should look into. But, you know, essentially there are 8 states in the south central part of the country, you know, right around Arkansas, Tennessee area, where about a little over 200 years ago, it was in 1812, or 1811, 1812, there was a massive earthquake. It was, it was somewhere around like 8.2, 8.4. The thought is that these quakes happen every 200 or so years. The next one will probably be in excess of 8.0, and it will do a lot of damage. As part of the work on that project, I got to read an interesting little tidbit from the from NESAC, the National Infrastructure Simulation and Analysis Center. It's out of, I think, Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. And they predicted, you know, after a number of studies, they came out with an analysis that said that after a New Madrid earthquake, you know, if it happened today, we could very quickly, following the quake, expect to have the country experience what they so quaintly referred to as a, quote, catastrophic cascading failure of the national grid. And they expect that post New Madrid quake, we will probably lose the eastern two-thirds of the country. We will lose the electricity for the eastern two-thirds of the country. And depending on where one is in relation to that, or to the epicenter of the quake, you know, power might come back in a few hours. If you're really far away, up in Maine or Massachusetts. But as you get closer and closer to the epicenter, your outage lasts longer and longer until there are places within, within, say, 300-400 miles of the epicenter where they're saying power might be out for upwards of a year.
Well, that's catastrophic. That's
it is.
And that could change the face of the nation for decades if it could ever be brought back.
Exactly. And it's something that prior to working on the New Madrid project, I really, and this is maybe about eight years, I had never really thought about a national grid down scenario. And honestly, maybe I did think about it and I thought it was the purview of, radical preppers, all these people who, the world is going to end. And then after seeing all of that analysis and going, wow, this can happen fairly easily, because the reality is we're actually somewhat overdue for a New Madrid quake. And then I started getting into other catastrophic disaster scenarios as part of my work, and started again encountering a time and again different massive threats to the grid, in addition to New Madrid, the EMP threat, and then the worst of them all, the solar threat from coronal mass ejections and the resulting geomagnetic storms, like the Carrington event in 1859. And some of this I know that to some people it does sound like crazy prepper stuff, but it's not, because the threat is extremely real. As a matter of fact, in 2012, we were incredibly fortunate. We literally dodged a bullet. Had the 2012 coronal mass ejection happened, 1 week earlier, we would have been directly in line with its travel path. And based on NASA's analysis of the 2012 CME, it would have probably been at least as strong as the Carrington event, and it would have done massive amounts of damage to our electrical infrastructure and to our electronics all around the world.
Yeah, around the world, because the whole northern hemisphere of the globe would have been affected by that CME. And I think the way things work, the southern portion of the hemisphere would be too, whereas the equator area, the central, is less likely. But I mean, most of the countries along the equator aren't as developed as we are.
Exactly. And, you know, one thing that really scares me, to be honest, about space weather and about CMEs and particularly the really large ones like Carrington or even larger than the Carrington event, is that these things can affect particularly, and there's new research out now that says, you know, there are, that our sun is capable of producing what are known as super flares. So, you know, they could have 10, 100, 500 times the strength of the flare that was associated with the Carrington event, and the attendant coronal mass ejection could be just as much larger. And things like that would really affect the entire world. And, you know, I think as an emergency manager, my role, my responsibility is to do what I can to ensure that, you know, everybody survives disasters in the jurisdictions I'm working for, and really continue our race, you know, the human race.
Yes.
And post something that's even Carrington event, but even, you know, let's say something that's 100 times stronger than the Carrington event, we're going to pretty much lose electricity globally. It will take down all the grids. I mean, and we've had things happen like this before. South Africa had a major hit on their grid. Canada had a major hit on their grid, you know, and from solar storms. And we're going to experience it again. And if we have a massive CME, we're going to lose grids worldwide. And the reality is, in first world developed countries like the US, like Europe, like parts of Asia, we're looking at massive numbers of dead within the first year after that, because we are so used to electricity.
Yes.
And we have evolved just in time supply chains for grocery stores, for medicine, for pretty much everything we rely on.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, you look at the EMP Commission report and what it says about North America post an EMP strike, and they predict 90% of the American, 90% of Americans will be dead a year after an EMP strike on North America.
A lot of people can't get their head around that. And for context, go back to episode 29 and 30 of this show, and you will have an opportunity to listen to Jonathan Hollerman talk about his research and the paper that he wrote that backs up pretty much what the EMP Commission has said. And that is because there's the lack of food, lack of clean water, lack of medical facilities and equipment, and civil unrest, and the psychological effects of a grid down causing people to go crazy, for want of another word, not crazy like I can't think of it now, but one flew over the cuckoo's nest kind of crazy, but the lack of food, lack of water, lack of sanitation, all those things culminate into a society that is not prepared, and it's curtains. Most people don't know how to live in that type of environment, and it doesn't matter anywhere in North America, except people who are living in East Russia, you know, far out in the gulag, probably surviving in that type of environment now, but we don't know how to do that.
Exactly.
It would be catastrophic. And so that 90% within a year to a year and a half is fully understandable. All you have to do is a little bit of research, and you can understand that those numbers are not hyperbole, that they are exactly on target because of the lifestyle that we have now and the lifestyle we would have overnight after a catastrophic event like the earthquake you were talking about, which is setting us up for another show, and the event of a grid down from the sun or any other threat that we have out there, which there are many ways to take down our grid.
Exactly.
We're going to break now for a commercial, and we will be right back, and we will be discussing about the trillion-dollar storm that looms. Hey, friends, please allow me to speak with you about something you may want to add to your regular health maintenance routine, as well as your preparedness supplies. A few years ago, I came across an article in a preparedness magazine that caught my attention. My wife and I have always been health conscious, and we have taken various supplements over the years. However, this article introduced us to the world of essential oils. My wife began researching to find a reputable company with high quality products. What she found was a company we have been with now for about 4 years, using their products, many of them daily. The company is doTERRA, and their products are certified pure therapeutic grade essential oils. Essential oils come in all grades of the scale, but doTERRA oils are, in our opinion, at the top. Sure, you can go to Walmart or your local pharmacy and purchase essential oils, but not many of those oils are recommended for internal use. Many of our oils can be used internally and topically, as well as diffused, for their wonderful aromatic fragrance and health benefits. Some of our favorites we use almost daily are lemon, clove, frankincense, lavender, En Garde blend, peppermint, and melaleuca, also known as tea tree oil. These oils have become our go-to remedies for managing our health throughout the year. In fact, we credit our oils for our overall good health. You can too. Just visit our website at www.oilsforlifetoday.com. That's oils, number four, lifetoday.com, and explore the wonderful world of certified pure therapeutic grade essential oils for yourself. And we're back with Drew Bumback, and we're talking about solar flares. There's a Forbes article that just came out. The date is October 10th, 2019. So it's pretty recent. And it talks about, the headline is, "A trillion-dollar storm looms for Earth, and it's not a hurricane." And it talks about the effects of a solar storm hitting the U.S. and knocking out our grid, and the financial loss that would come of it. I mean, it would cause a financial meltdown in this country, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would. There's no question about it. I mean, what's really both disturbing and interesting at the same time to me is there are a lot of people who, you know, as I talk to them about this, they say, well, it would cost too much to retrofit the grid to protect against EMP or cyber or solar storm. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to rely on generators for, you know, critical facilities and for government, and that will keep us going.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, my response is, well, now, wait a second. How are these generators going to keep us going? Because if we're talking EMP or solar, they're probably going to be affected as well because they're tied into the entire system.
They are.
And so they're going to be fried. But let's say magically, somehow they're not fried because, you know, you've had the foresight to build them inside a building that has a Faraday cage built around it, and you've got a fast response surge protector that is both, you know, has a fast enough response and is interrupts enough of the surge to protect against, you know, the surge from EMP or solar flare. Coronal mass ejection and resulting geomagnetic storm. So,
right.
Okay, now, great, your generator is still surviving. Now, everything inside your building, though, unless the entire building is shielded, is shot. So, okay, you can't power that up, even though your generator is running. But let's say your building is shielded, too, which is, again, extremely costly. And so now your building and your generator are good to go, and you've got power for your government agency, your police department, your hospital, your grocery store, whatever. How long is the fuel for that generator going to last? And where is it getting its fuel? Is it a giant tank of diesel in the ground? Is it a giant tank of gasoline? Or, like so many generators, a number of facilities that I'm familiar with that I worked at, is it tied into the local gas company and it uses natural gas from the local gas company? Well, the local gas company is not necessarily going to survive, because from a geomagnetic storm, you get induced currents along all the metal piping in the ground, and that can lead to, you know, that can short out pumping stations and that keep pressure in the gas pipelines, and it can also lead to premature corrosion of the pipes that let them burst.
Now, doesn't it also lead to static electricity that could ignite those tanks?
It could, I think. I'm not sure how it works.
I'm not an engineer, so I don't know how that works, but it was just
if it dissipates within the ground, or I think also part of it is that, you know, inside the piping, you're outside of the explosive limit. It's actually, you know, pretty much 100% natural gas. So you're outside the upper explosive limit.
Oh, okay.
So it won't actually combust. But still, you know, that's an issue in and of itself. So, okay, let's say it's not the gas company, it's this giant tank of diesel. Well, how long can you run your generator and power your entire facility or your complex for, you know, on that tank of diesel? Is it going to last you a week, a month, 2 months? What happens when that week is up or that month is up? Where do you get more? Because the diesel trucks aren't running anymore. The refineries are out of commission. We're now into this nationwide or worldwide grid down scenario. And the other thing that, you know, also gets me is there are people who say, we look at grid down and we look at, you know, what are the consequences? Are we going to have civil unrest? Oh, hell yeah, we are. I mean, you look at what happened out in California, where they had looting within 12 hours of PG&E cutting the power last week. You had people shooting at PG&E trucks and vandalizing PG&E offices and other places. So we look at things like that. We look at the threats to our safety. Something that we haven't really talked a lot about, and this is going to be key, particularly in a long-term grid down scenario, particularly if it comes from a solar storm and the resulting coronal mass ejection and geomagnetic storm. You know, we can say, oh, well, yeah, okay, 90% of people in developed countries will die. But hey, 10% are going to survive. And all those folks in Africa and Asia and in South America and other places, you know, up in the Arctic, where they don't rely on power, where, you know, they live the way most of us did, you know, 200, 300, 500 years ago, well, they're going to survive, so the human race will survive. Well, yes, and maybe no, because in addition to, you know, we've lost power for the entire globe thanks to, you know, a coronal mass ejection that's 10 or 100 times stronger than the Carrington class event.
Right.
We have approximately 450 commercial nuclear reactors worldwide.
Oh, yeah.
Most of these are dependent, actually not most, they're all dependent on electric power to run their cooling system.
Exactly.
And all we have to do it, to see what happens to them post-grid down scenario, is look at what happened in Fukushima.
Yeah.
And we have, you know, our Nuclear Regulatory Commission is saying, oh, that's not going to happen here. You know, we're prepared for that. Some of the plants in this country, first off, the NRC only requires them to be prepared for 4 hours. And presume that their flex plan that they came up with, where they have all these generators that they can move from plant to plant, will kick in and they will have generators on site, and then they can run their cooling system until the grid comes back up. There are some plants in this country that don't have a plan for anything more than 1 hour of power outage.
Yeah.
So we're going to have 450 reactors around the world. Well, not all at once, but in a cascading fashion, they will all go Fukushima on us, and they will all have critical meltdowns, and they will all release massive amounts of radioactivity.
Yeah.
And along with that, we've got biocontainment labs that have all sorts of nasty bugs in them that are contained. But, you know, when you have all of these massive potential time bombs that have to have electricity to keep them from going off, when you lose grids worldwide, that's a dead man switch for all of these time bombs. And they are going to go off. They may not go off right away. It may be a couple of weeks, but they're all going to go off. And then, you know, hey, with 450 commercial reactors worldwide, if those go, if they all go Fukushima, then, you know, I don't know how much we're looking at in the way of increased radiation, but I'm going to bet that it's going to be a significant amount, and it's going to be enough to significantly affect even the folks who live without electricity routinely now. And so it may, you know, in a catastrophic global grid down scenario, or even in just a catastrophic North American grid down scenario, we could end up putting enough radioactive contamination in the atmosphere to do massive amounts of irreversible damage to not just the human race, but all species.
Yeah. Food sources mainly.
Exactly.
No, that's terrible. That's an aspect that I haven't heard too many people talk about. I know there's been talk about the nuclear plants, but it hasn't been extrapolated the way you just did. So that's quite an eye opener, but we're getting close to the end of our time, unfortunately. And we're definitely going to have you back. In the last minute, can you just wrap us up here and let us know what we can do, and anything else you want to mention in the last 45 seconds here?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, well, the things we can do, we can work to prepare ourselves. I think we all have to be responsible for our own preparedness, for our families, rather than expect that the government will be there, because in a catastrophic situation, as we've seen with, you know, Katrina and other disasters, FEMA can't do everything. But we also have to work with our elected representatives and with the Federal Electric Reliability Council, FERC, to ensure that we have adequate safeguards on our grid, because currently we're not protecting our grid against the kind of impact it would experience after a major solar storm, major coronal mass ejection, or a major EMP attack. And we also have to work to locally to not just help protect our families and prepare our families, but prepare our communities so that in the event of a disaster, be it a grid down, be it, you know, a hurricane, our community is more resilient, and the people in the community know what to do, know how they can step up and help each other until things get back to normal.
Yes. Yeah, those are all great ideas. Well, Drew, I thank you for being on the show. And civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio. This is where I post mostly, and on Twitter at civil_def_radio. Again, I want to thank Drew for being on the show. And to you, our friends and listeners out there, please be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.